This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week, we come to you from Bremerhaven, Germany, to Southampton in the United Kingdom on board the brand new NCL Encore. Joining me now, the President and Chief Executive Officer of Norwegian Cruise Lines, Andy Stewart. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Peter. Thanks for having me.
This is your which inaugural? How many have you done now?
You know, this is the 12th ship that we've taken delivery of from Meyerweft. So I've been involved in a couple more because we took one ship from a French shipyard and another one from a different German yard. But this is the 12th that we've taken from Meyerweft in Papenburg.
In how many years?
Well, I've been with the company for 31 years. For my sins, which makes me just feel old, Peter. But anyway, never mind. Why do you bring that up?
I just had to put some perspective into it. It's all about context.
Okay, thank you.
When you think about the growth of the cruise industry, not necessarily just NCL, the fact that you're taking delivery of a new ship is no longer a news bulletin because you're taking new ships all the time now.
That's very true. I was thinking yesterday as we took delivery of the ship about the fleet we had when I joined the company in 1988. And I made the point that the entire fleet was only slightly larger than the capacity of the ship that we took delivery of yesterday.
Say that once again. That's wild.
Yeah, the entire capacity of the fleet of Norwegian Cruise Line when I joined the company in 1988 is only slightly larger than the capacity of the ship that we took delivery of yesterday.
So the scale is outrageous.
The scale has changed substantially. And as you, the point you make as well, that the number of new ships that are being delivered every year has changed hugely. When I joined the industry, a delivery of a new ship was just a huge event across the, you know, across the world. You know, there was this big announcement about a new ship. Today, it's another new ship. And it's the industry has changed dramatically during that time.
But in the law of supply and demand, the argument was always made and then basically debunked that you couldn't fill it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the industry was very reliant on the North American market when I first started. There were very few non-US cruisers at that point. And what's happened since that time is that the industry has globalized dramatically. Ships are all over the world in a way that we could only have imagined back in 1988. So that's been a huge engine for growth, that the industry has just moved further and further and further afield. Allowing this tremendous growth that we've seen.
But when you think about it, we talk about tremendous growth, but that's a relative term when you consider how many people haven't cruised.
Yeah, there's still an enormous number of people who haven't cruised. The opportunity for cruising continues to be a very large one in my mind. The value for money offered by cruising continues to expand the industry. And, you know, I think we're a very, very innovative business. The things you see on ships today are unimaginable from the ships of yesterday. And so I think you continue to see the industry getting disproportionate attention in travel because of the exciting innovations that you see on brand new ships.
And then, of course, there's demographics. I remember when my mom turned 80, I wanted to send her on a cruise ship. And her response to me was, well, I don't want to go on a ship with a lot of old people. And, of course, that really wasn't the case when she got on that ship.
No, it's the industry. When I joined the industry, honestly, I didn't know anything about cruising. I thought it was a product for blue-haired ladies looking for a second husband. That was sort of my image of cruising when I joined in 1988. And I was presented.
What was that description you just said? Yeah. Say it again.
I thought it was an experience for blue-haired ladies looking for a second husband. I know it sounds strange.
Is that how you met your wife? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm moving swiftly on. So I didn't know anything about the modern day cruise industry. Yeah. It had not registered with me. And so I went for the interview for the job. And I was told about this industry that was predominantly in North America, that was appealing to a younger audience and families and children. And I didn't really understand it. I thought of transatlantic crossings. That was all I really thought about. And so the industry has changed completely. during that period. And it's every day. People, you know, everywhere. In the UK, if you said to someone, hey, what about cruising? They wouldn't think of that transatlantic liner. They would think of young, fun, family cruising in many cases.
You know, I remember, talk about change. I remember in 1984, I was sailing in the Mediterranean on a Royal cruise ship, an old Greek-owned cruise line.
Royal Cruise Line. Yeah.
And the crew member said to me, I remember this so distinctly, a crew member came up to me and said, I was wearing a white shirt. And he said, you might not want to go on the deck at night with a white shirt. And I said, why is that? He goes, well, that's when we burn all the garbage. Mm. And this is 1984, right? And sure enough, I couldn't believe him. And I went on deck, and I was like, next thing you know, I have brown spots on my shirt from the embers coming out of the stack. Those are the days that people weren't paying attention to the environment. Now, I mean, you know, everybody's making announcements about no longer using single-use plastic items, which, by the way, is not a news bulletin anymore, but it was last year, right? How have you gotten to the point? I mean, you have an entire deck on this ship, for example, which, by the way, you've had on a number of your ships over recent years, that is entirely devoted to waste management.
I'm extremely proud of where the industry's come and where Norwegian Cruise Lines have come as a brand in this area. I think it's very, very impressive how we've embraced this desire to go way above and beyond regulation and really move into a new world when it comes to sustainability, environmental protection. And it crosses every area of what we do. We've invested a huge amount in exhaust management systems that really solve the challenge of emissions. And that's been
those are the scrubbers.
Those are the scrubbers, and that's fantastic technology that really cleans the exhaust, and all you get coming out of the funnel is steam. Without any anything that impacts the environment. Our ability to deal with wastewater treatment systems. We have extremely advanced wastewater treatment systems that really clean everything completely, such that you end up with pure, clean water at the end of the process. And as you've talked about single-use plastics, I'm very proud that this is the first ship of its scale that comes out without any single-use plastic water bottles at all on board.
So if somebody has a plastic water bottle on board, they brought it on with them.
Absolutely, we don't have. This is the very first ship of its scale that comes out with any single-use plastic water bottles.
Let's talk about some of those numbers, because we forget how many straws people use.
Yeah. We eliminated straws across the entire fleet last year. We've now eliminated plastic water bottles across the this ship comes out without any, and we'll eliminate them across the entire fleet from the 1st of January of next year. And we have the list of every single use plastic that we use anywhere across our fleet, and we're checking them off one at a time. Some of them there isn't a solution today, and we're pushing partners to come up with viable solutions.
Give me one that doesn't have a solution right
now. A plastic bag, a waste, I'm trying to think
of garbage bag.
A garbage bag, yeah. Today there isn't a viable solution.
There's no such thing as a bamboo garbage bag.
Not yet. But we believe that's coming quickly. I mean, the replacement we have for a plastic water bottle, the cap feels like a plastic cap, but it's made of sugar cane.
Really? It felt like plastic to me.
It feels like plastic, yeah. but it's made of sugar cane. So technology is moving really quickly, and we're pushing partners to come up with solutions that will allow us to check every single thing off the list that is on our list of single-use plastics, because we believe that is feasible and it can be done, but it can't be done by us alone. We need partners to help us do it.
Right. Plus, you have a zero tolerance policy on anything going over the side of the ship.
Oh, we've had that for many years. We take that extremely seriously. I say to anyone, come with me to the garbage room, which, you know, doesn't sound like a very attractive
offer. Is that part of your brochure? Is that your brochure?
That's how I met my wife.
No, darling,
come to me.
Let me show
the
you our waste. Yeah, but I've been in that garbage room. I have to tell you, it's remarkable. Everything gets crushed. Everything gets binded, right? And nothing goes over.
I would challenge any land-based facility to improve upon what we're doing in the area of look at looking after garbage, making sure that the right thing is going into the right recycling area, make sure those things are getting to the right place at the end of the day, how we deal with glass, cans, plastics, and so on and so forth. I would challenge anyone, come see what we do. I believe there's a lot of
places. I actually think, I mean, you have tours of the galley and you have tours of the bridge. You should really have tours of waste management here. People need to see it.
Yeah, I'm genuinely proud of it. I'll show it to anybody and really feel like it's an area that the industry and Norwegian Cruise Line in particular have focused on and done a good job at.
So what's your biggest challenge that remains in that area?
I think perception is probably the biggest challenge. I think getting a broader understanding of really what's happening and what we're doing and how we're so far ahead of regulation and how our thinking goes beyond saying, oh, how do we meet regulation? It goes into the area of how do we take this to the next level? How do we push partners to develop solutions that will help us accelerate this process?
Andy, as you look at the industry as a whole, explosive growth across every arena you can imagine, but also in terms of where you're going, in terms of where you're also not going. You had a huge hiccup this year when the Trump administration, essentially blindsided everybody and said, you can't go to Cuba anymore. I mean, that wasn't just you. That was every cruise line was going, yeah. Right? Because everybody wanted to be in there first to begin with, right?
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden, I believe the number was you had something like, not just you, but the industry had something like 800,000 bookings on the books that just essentially evaporated on that.
It had become a very significant market, the Cuban market. And so the change came very quickly. But the beauty of our industry is that we're flexible.
You can move your assets.
Yeah. You
learned that at 9/11.
We learned that after 9/11. And we learn it as, the world, as you know, better than anybody, things happen around the world. And when things happen that require us to, adjust and change and move, we're an industry that can move very, very quickly. Ships have propellers and rudders, and we can take them somewhere else in the event we have a change like that. So, it was one day to the next. And as an industry, we reacted extremely quickly. We had new itineraries on sale, a few days later. And the other thing we did was we did the right thing with guests. With guests who'd booked a cruise to Cuba, thought they were going to Cuba. They ended up going to a different destination. And
you sailed to Little Havana in Miami. No, sorry.
We offered some wonderful itineraries in the Bahamas, Peter.
But the bottom line is they could opt out at that point.
Yeah, we gave people great options. Yeah. And they could stay if they wanted to, and we gave them some good choices, or they could cancel if they chose not to sail.
And of course, if that rule ever changes, you'd be back in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it was a very popular destination. It's an extremely interesting place, and it's a place that people want to go to. So absolutely, we would go back in the event there was a change.
And there's some other destinations in the world that cruise lines had changed itineraries on in terms of, thinking it was not either politically correct or politically or safe, Turkey being one of them. I mean, for a long time, tour operators, not just you guys, but tour operators weren't able to even get insurance to go there. So they pulled out, right?
Yeah.
Are the cruise lines coming back to Turkey now?
Yes, they are, absolutely. Our premium brands, Regent, Seven Seas, and Oceania, both back in Turkey, and on the Norwegian brand, we also have some calls into Kusadasi, where guests can go to visit Ephesus. So, absolutely, Turkey's coming back, and it's a fantastic destination. And so, we very much hope that becomes a destination that thrives again.
And Mexico has always been popular for your members.
Yes, yeah, Mexico's very popular. We have a lot of Western Caribbean cruises that are cruising to Cozumel and Costa Maya, and those destinations are extremely popular. And then we run some Mexican Riviera cruises out of Los Angeles that are also extremely popular. So Mexico's doing well.
Now, this coming year, I'm probably even low on this estimate. I think there'll be 6 million ships in Alaska.
Alaska is a very popular cruising destination. I think that's what you're trying to say.
Yes. But,
we've definitely invested in our capacity in Alaska. We took Norwegian Joy and Norwegian Bliss, two of our newest ships, to Alaska this past summer. And it's a destination that's perfect for cruising. Some really interesting destinations, beautiful scenic cruising. So it's a really nice combination.
But it becomes a logistical challenge when you think about how many ships can be in the inside passage at any one time.
Yeah, I mean, this is an area that the industry has to really focus on, ensuring that we deliver a fantastic experience on the ship, on land, in every destination we take guests to. And that's all about, you know, managing it in the right way, partnering with destinations to make sure.
It's sort of like this double-edged sword because so much of the economy is depending on you, right? You're depending on it as well. And yet at the same time, you have to worry about depleting resources and how much you can tax the community. I mean, yes. Not just you, but the industry itself.
Yeah, and we have to be thoughtful about how we expand destinations, where we take capacity. And we spend an awful lot of time working with the local destination in order to make sure that when guests come off the ship, it is a great experience. Because it's the people buy a cruise first and foremost for the destination. They say, hey, I want to go to Alaska. I want to go to Europe. I want to go to Australia. And then they start thinking about, you know, which ship or which cruise line that is going to take them there. And so
you're saying that the ship is not taking precedence over the destination?
It starts with a destination. Okay. It still starts.
Although there are some ships, I would think, that are being sold as destinations in and of themselves.
Yeah, I think you could quite happily spend 7 days on the ship, never get off, and not be bored in any way, shape, or form. There is so much to do. But it is the combination of the destination and the ship that makes cruising a winning combination.
And when you think about it, there's a sort of a geographic awareness that either is there or isn't among passengers, because after a while they're just taken with the experiences on the ship, and then all of a sudden the destinations become incidental. I mean, you say no.
You know, I think you're right to an extent. It depends where.
Yeah.
So you're right to an extent. I think when people are visiting Rome and Florence and Barcelona and some of these, these. Various...
Well, those are all the failed art history majors. Those are the ones who said, I gotta go once, right?
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me, let's fly away.
Joining me now is someone I've actually known, I have to admit this, for 11 years. We go back, in the interest of full disclosure, to one of the highest rated shows ever done on CNBC that I produced and hosted, called Cruise Inc., where we were actually spending a week in the life of one ship to talk about the entire cruise industry. That ship was the Norwegian Pearl, somewhat smaller than the ship we're on now, dramatically smaller, but he was on it, I was on it. He's the Regional Vice President of Fleet Hotel Operations for NCL, Klaus Lugmeier. How are you, sir?
Peter, thank you very much for being on your great travel show, and welcome home.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, to put things in perspective, I said that ship was smaller. At the time, it wasn't. At the time, it was one of your bigger ships.
It was one of our largest ships back then, the beautiful Norwegian Pearl, with 3,000 guests. And now she is considered a medium-class ship size.
And how many people on this ship?
Right now, we have 2,500. Double occupancy is 4,500, and we can have up to 5,000 guests on board.
And crew?
1,765.
So we're almost at 7,000.
Yes, sir. Amazing.
Wow. I mean... I wouldn't call it necessarily the economy of scale, just the scale itself is staggering.
It is. It's a floating city. I mean, you know, from 21 bars and lounges to 29 food and beverage restaurant options to dine from.
How many kitchens?
30 altogether.
30 kitchens.
Each restaurant has its own individual kitchen.
So now, in the old days of cruising, that was not the case. You had one kitchen serving everybody.
One main kitchen and serving everybody. Now everything is individual. Every outlet has its own chef and dedicated team members being trained in that cuisine. And, you know, everything is prepared a la minute, fresh. Nothing is pre-cooked. That's the beauty about freestyle.
But in the old days, everything was prepackaged.
Well, you have to, because how are you going to deal with having 2,000 guests walking in at the same time, placing the orders? Rather busy, so you have to have a lot of the items pre-made and then just dish them out.
Now, part of what we did when we did that show 11 years ago, which is just as staggering to me as it is today, is the sheer numbers that we're talking about, right? So you have, let's say you're not even at 5,000 guests. Let's say you're at 2,500 like we are on this particular cruise. That's 7,500 meals a day.
Yes, minimum to start with.
Minimum?
Yeah, then we have the crew too. You know, happy crew, happy ship, happy guests. So we have to have our little breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and a little snack.
A little snack?
Yeah.
And then you're going to say a little schnitzel.
Yes, and a strudel.
No, stop it. But let's go back to, you know, just what you say about the crew. In the old days, and I say really old days, and I'm revealing a little known secret. The place where I used to go on the ship, if they let me, is the Chinese Laundry. Because the laundry at those had the best Chinese food.
They used to have their own kitchen there, yes.
Yeah, but that's gone.
No, that's a long time gone. Yeah. That was in the 80s.
Thank you for making me feel very old.
No, you're very young, sir.
Thank you. But today, the crew is getting the same meals as the passengers.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have 70 different nationalities, and it's very important to cater to everybody's needs and everybody's like. You know, we have a healthy section for our team members. We have different kind of cuisine. We have our West Indies or Asian cuisine, European, American.
You have Indian?
Of course, a big one, absolutely, yeah. One of my favorite. We have it up in the Garden Cafe. We have an Indian station for our guests, too, very popular.
And that's new?
That's brand new, yes.
What's radically changed?
Radically changed on this ship is including having our first On the Biscapetta Italian restaurant right here around the corner, which you sampled yesterday. I hope you had a great time.
I did.
Is technology. I mean, we have Galaxy Pavilion with virtual reality games in there, and that's extremely popular. We have the Speedway, a two-story racetrack.
Well, had a Speedway on the last ship.
Yes, which was great, but now it's taken to the next level. It's two stories. So you drive literally out of the ship.
It's hanging over the ship,
and it has two levels. And I hope you have time so we could maybe race together, please.
Well, the thing about those cars, and I did it on the last ship, is they're not gas powered. They're electric.
Electric, absolutely.
But they sound like gas. They feel like it. Your ass is on the ground.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of fun actually to race each other. For any age groups, you know, from the kids to us grown-up kids, you know.
Well, this is not necessarily in your area, but I'll ask it. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's next? Because every ship, every cruise line is trying to, it's a game of one-upsmanship in terms of attractions, right? I mean, of course, first it was the water slides.
Yes.
And then it was the rock climbing walls. Yes. And then it was the wave pools. Now it's automobile racing. Mm-hmm. You've got some ships that actually have a roller coaster.
Yeah, there's no limits, you know. The sky's the limit. But, you know, we always listen to our guests and to our travel partners. And you get ideas from them. And then, of course, with the engineering and our CEOs, and they have to make a decision what is visible to put on a ship.
Klaus, we talked about all the stunts and all the attractions on the ship. Is there something that came up as an idea that everybody said, wow, this is great, and it just didn't work?
Not on this ship, but I remember many years ago on one of our vessels, we were trying to put an ice skating ring up on the sports deck, you know, one of those portable ones where you lay out the mats, and that was a complete disaster. To put it together, nobody wanted it. We scrapped this right away.
Right away. Bye-bye.
Yes, bye-bye. Auf Wiedersehen.
One of the great nautical terms, Auf Wiedersehen. Now let's go back to the actual food operation.
Yes.
Now, we talked about all the different types of food you have. I'll ask the same question. Is there something you tried on the ship as a food offering or as a beverage offering that also didn't work, and why?
No, I must say we were very lucky at Norwegian. We always were innovative. We were the first cruise line with sushi bar, first cruise line with tabanaki, first cruise line with steakhouse. We were actually the first cruise line with the first specialty restaurant at sea in 1988. And the cuisines we are producing, there was not one failure. We are adjusting several different dishes, yes. They're absolutely. I mean, because I like my schnitzel doesn't mean everybody wants a schnitzel, as you know.
Listen, I have to tell everybody this story. When we did that, I do not eat schnitzel, okay? I'm not even a meat eater. But when we did the one-hour special on CNBC, which, by the way, is still on the air. I haven't been on NBC in 10 years, and this show is still running.
It's great.
But when we did it, remember I said Klaus could short sheet your bed? He did worse. Every night I came in the room, there was another piece of schnitzel in there.
Exactly.
And he put it in different places. Stop it. Now let's go back. Tastes change.
All the time.
Passenger demands change. Expectations change.
All the time.
So it's one thing to be cutting edge on sushi 10 years ago. Now everybody expects it.
Yeah, now it's a must. I mean, when I started 31 years ago on ships, if you would have told me that we're going to have steakhouses and Formula One racing, I would have said you're crazy.
Look, 31 years ago on a ship, you had prime rib.
Yes.
You had potatoes.
Lobster and steak. Midnight buffet.
The famous midnight buffet. Mm-hmm. The all-time stupidest question ever asked by a passenger is, what time is the midnight buffet? But let's not go there. You had something that I haven't seen. I wish you'd bring it back just for nostalgia reasons. Baked Alaska.
We're working on it.
Are you really?
You're absolutely correct. There is a demand for it. And what's old, it's new. There is some traditional dishes. And we're working on it. We haven't yet figured out.
You're really going to do it?
not on every ship, but there is the demand for it in Alaska to have a baked Alaska. Now, I think it's a great dish.
You might not
be able to, you know, to do the dancing and the thing. This will come without it, but the dish itself.
Well, in the old days, they came in with flaming. The baked Alaska, flaming baked Alaska,
this won't happen.
And all the waiters were dancing.
Yes.
This is not going to happen now.
There will be no dancing and no fire for sure. No flames on your head. But the dish itself is very popular, so some version of it, absolutely, we're looking into.
Cruise lines like Norwegian have, in many cases, repositioned ships for particular markets, mm-hmm. the Chinese market, for mm-hmm. example. And every cruise line went in there mm-hmm. thinking that this is going to be the answer. It didn't always work, right? Not everybody was putting ships in the Chinese market, right. But then you started taking them out.
Well, you know, we as you see, North America is an extremely strong market. Most of our ships right now, it's a cold winter in Europe. Who wants to be in the cold weather, right? Nothing better than sailing out of Miami into the sunshine or out of Tampa, Florida, or any warm destination in Florida, or our beautiful Bride of America in Hawaii. I mean, that's a prime destination all year round, sailing the Hawaiian Islands, and we're the only ones who can do it. So that is always a big success. And, you know, you have the destinations in the summertime. You have Alaska, Europe. And we do go over to Southeast Asia, but not all year round.
But I guess the question I was going to ask is about sourcing the food, because in different markets, you can...
We have everything flown in from the U.S.
Everything?
Mainly everything. Everything has to be FDA approved. You cannot just go in any market and buy food because you don't know where the food came from, and safety comes first.
Are there any local markets where you go out and get the local fish?
No. This has to be all approved. Those days are over. We cannot just go.
Really? You
can't? No.
Chef can't go to the local market?
No, he cannot go shopping and just buy his own fish and then cook it. God forbid some. No, those days are good. Bye-bye. This has to be certified, has to be controlled, and it's good. It's good that way, actually.
So everything comes in basically fresh, frozen.
Fresh, frozen, and some fresh. You know, we're out of New York, we're out of Miami. We do have fresh fish. I mean, you have Ocean Blue, that's our seafood restaurant. All of the items are fresh. There's nothing frozen there.
Exactly. What's your biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge is to keep our crew motivated, to find crew. You know, we're building more and more ships, every company, and there will be a big demand for crew in every rank, every file, including myself, and train up the next generation. That's the biggest challenge. I mean, everybody's rolling out 5-6 ships the next 7 years. We already have to look for the next Tabanaki chef, the next executive chef, the next general manager, the next food and beverage director, and every position is important. So we're working already on a succession plan.
But there's a shortage.
A shortage, yeah, not a shortage, but yeah, there is a shortage, yes, absolutely. And so we try to, you know, train our team members, and we have fantastic teamers from all over the world. We have the best crew and management, you know. This is a happy United Nations sailing and working together, and everybody should take an example of
Toto?
It.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Joining me now, the president of Norwegian Cruise Lines, Harry Sommer.
Good morning, Peter.
Now, what I like about you is your history. You come from the travel agency side, really.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, you started that way. And when you think about the distribution of tickets and berths and distribution, it's still very much travel agency led in the cruise industry.
Absolutely. The primary source of our business comes from the travel agency community. And I'm glad that you mentioned my background, because I ran a travel agency for 6 years during the early 2000s. And we focused 100% of our activity on selling cruise lines. Very, very focused.
Cruise
sales.
Only. Cruise only.
We were a cruise only agency. Very focused on just servicing 5 or 6 cruise lines. So our frontline agents and our marketing and our salespeople were all experts in what we did. And I think it provides me a unique perspective that I can understand both sides of the business, having been in the cruise industry now for nearly 30 years.
Well, because before the travel agency side, you were actually at a company that's no longer with us, Renaissance Cruises.
Yes, and that's where I met...
The R-Ships.
The R-Ships. And that's where I met, of course, Frank Del Rio, who's also my current boss as the president and CEO of the Norwegian Cruise Line Holding, our parent company.
Let's talk about the evolution, because when you think about the cruise industry and you look at just the sheer numbers of it all, you're still in an industry that's in your infancy. I mean, the upside is still outrageously high.
Sure. About 30 million people around the world cruise each year. The majority come from North America, but still it's a worldwide activity. But when you look at the overall global vacation market, cruising represents about 2% of all overall vacations. So we agree. We think the upside is tremendous. You know, we don't look at the other industry players as our competitors. You know, we wish everyone well, and we think that the job that Royal Caribbean and some of the other brands do in bringing publicity and visibility to the industry is great for all of us. But for us, the real competition, the real upside is the hotel industry. Because for every 50 vacations that are taken each year by people around the world, 49 go to hotels and one goes on a cruise. We want to get those 49.
So 49 are paying a resort fee.
Sure, sure. And having what we consider to be a less than ideal experience.
Listen, right before we did our segment, I was talking about an experience I just had at a hotel, which there are lessons learned for this, and I'll share to you what it was.
Please.
I was at the W Hotel in Chicago. I was in my room. It was the afternoon. I was hungry. I called room service and ordered a 10-inch pizza, period. And I ordered a bottle of water just because I didn't. I mean, actually, it's tap water because I was trying to be healthy, right? Pizza. But anyway, it comes up to the room. How much was the pizza? A 10-inch pizza.
I can't
take
imagine.
Take a wild guess.
$8? $10?
Wow. I want to go to work for you. $44.
Wow.
It was outrageous to begin with. It was $27 for the pizza, a $7 delivery charge, a $6 in-room dining charge. In-room dining. It's a pizza, right?
On top of delivery.
On top of delivery. And then wonderful. They left the space at the bottom for gratuity.
Sure.
I mean, come on. That's.
And I'm sure you were quite generous.
I am, because you know what? I gave them a lot of time on my show to discuss it.
Very good.
Yeah. By the way, anybody from the W Hotel who wants to come on this show and justify the $44 pizza, I'll pay your airfare to come.
Well, you know, Peter, we're
happy. By the way, there'll be a service charge.
Peter, yeah. we're happy we don't have to do things like that. Yeah. You know, I think...
But the reason why I bring that up is about the all-inclusive nature...
Exactly.
Of cruising.
I think one of the highlights, one of the benefits we have on a ship like this is we have 29 different dining options, most of them complimentary. We have wonderful entertainment at night, all types of activities from racetracks and virtual reality, galaxy pavilions, laser tag. And there's some small fees on some of those things like the racetrack. But generally speaking, the entertainment is complimentary. Most of the food is complimentary. You can have an extraordinary vacation. You pay once for your cruise fare. You come on board and you enjoy yourself. I believe that this cruise ship is rivals and is superior to the best resorts around the world. And we encourage people to come in and try.
Now, thank you for that sales pitch.
Of course,
that's your job. But let me ask you this. Let's go back to your days at Renaissance. In Renaissance, I think your biggest activity was the Midnight Buffet.
You know, not quite. During that time, Midnight Buffet was big.
Still, come on.
Yes, but even back then, the cruise product was starting to get a little bit more upscale. But Renaissance, the main activity there, the main focus there was on destinations. You know, we built ships
that could get into smaller ports.
Exactly. And really, we went all around the world. We had ships in Europe, in Asia, in Tahiti.
By the way, last year, I cruised the Norwegian fjords on board the Azamara. And the Azamara used to be one of your ships.
Yeah, sure. They were eight of them, and we wound up with five, and Azamara has two, and I think there's still one in the Carnival fleet somewhere. So they all found really wonderful homes.
Exactly. But let's go back to audience expectation and demand. Because we're getting into a world in the cruise industry, and I understand it, of experiential one-upsmanship. Everybody's trying to outdo everybody else with some other attraction that you couldn't believe would actually find its way to a ship.
Sure. Sure. So, of course, we have the 1,100-foot racetrack, the cantilevers over the side of the ship, and these wonderful water slides and the whole nine yards. But I'll tell you, you know, those are great marketing tools to get people interested, people that perhaps wouldn't otherwise experience a cruise. But for us, the core aren't those activities. They're great. We want people to experience it. But for us, the core is the day-to-day excellent service, excellent food, wonderful staff. That's what we think makes a memorable vacation.
I mean, I'm sure there's at least one of your passengers who just gets on the racetrack and never leaves for 7 days.
I don't think we're open 24 hours a day, but there are certainly people
that enjoy it. Well,
There's certainly people that enjoy it multiple times during the cruise.
So take off your president's hat for a second and just put on your passenger hat, because you've been in this business for a long time, but you've also cruised. What's the one thing when you get on a cruise ship that when you walk on that ship, you know right away, this ain't working?
You know, I've been on ships where, certainly not for our brand, but I've been on ships where you can see they haven't replaced the carpet in years, and the wool coverings are starting to peel off a little bit, and the staff just doesn't look happy to be there. And, you know, those are things
that's that not
you
a good sign.
No, those are things that you can ascertain probably within the first 5 minutes on boarding on the ship. That's usually a good sign that you're not going to have a good experience. And those things that are so visible, I mean, that's the stuff you have to get right, because that's the first impression that the guests get.
Right. Now, so many of your cruises, just because of the nature of the business and the growth, are repeaters.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, within the family of brands, we have Regent, Oceania, and Norwegian. Certainly on Oceania and Regent, over half of our guests are past passengers. But in NCL, we're growing.
You have a
rapidly.
Lot of first-timers here.
Yes. So it's about 40% past passengers, and the other 60% are first-timers. And then within the 60%, half have perhaps cruised on another cruise line, and half are actually brand new to cruising.
And at least we're essentially an inaugural here on this ship.
Yes.
I would guess that there are people who are on the ship who've been on every inaugural of NCL.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that, because that goes back 50 years.
But, no, they haven't found that body yet.
Okay, yes, exactly right. Right. But yes, we have people that have certainly been on the last 5, 6, 7 of them. You know, great trade and media supporters that come back over and over again. You know, this is my fourth delivery for NCL. So I'm beginning to recognize a lot of friendly faces.
We saw the evolution and the growth, or at least the prospective growth, of the Chinese market in Asia.
Yes.
Right? I mean, when you look at the population of China and how many people haven't even traveled, right? And we're under 5%, right?
Oh, yes.
But even under 5%, we're talking bazillions, you know. Where do you see the growth there? Because at one point, every cruise line was positioning their ships there. They were doing a purpose-built ship for the Chinese market. It hasn't yet really jumped.
Yes, I think certainly long term, you look 10, 15 years down the road, we think there's tremendous potential in the China market. We're at a slightly different point in our evolution than some of the other cruise lines. We have a fleet of 17 ships, and there's still many other places in the world that we believe are unserved or underserved, that our ships do better from a guest perspective, do better from a financial perspective. Of course, that's important as well. So we believe in the future of China, but we still think it's 10 or 15 years away from being able to support this type of product that you see here today on the Encore.
Right, because, I mean, listen, I've been on ships that are Chinese built and Chinese purpose built. They have two decks, smoking and more smoking. And they have the other two decks are gambling and more gambling.
And you forgot the two decks for eating and more eating.
Yeah.
The Chinese are good eaters too.
They are. We were talking about the Chinese market. We, you know, I go back to the number of ports that go back to your days on and Renaissance, right? If you took a look at the number of true ports that cruise ships called on back in, let's say, 20 years ago, 1998, you were at maybe 300.
Sure.
Today, we're over 1,100.
Sure.
I mean, it's like there are ports that didn't even know they had ports that you guys are going to, right?
No, absolutely. You know, if you look back on the history of the cruise industry, you go back 15 or 20 years, it was mostly what we call an American sport, you know, and even that, you know, mostly a lot in Florida, some in L.A. We all remember the Love Boat back from the 70s or whenever that show
was. It was the 70s.
And it's really expanded exponentially in the last 15 to 20 years, where cruising has taken hold of in Europe, Asia, Australia. You know, Australia is remarkable, one of the top penetrated cruise markets in the world, coming from nothing maybe 15 or 20 years ago. So really, it's expanded globally.
Is there a place in the world, other than, you know, conflicted areas, that you're not going?
You know, I think there are places in the world where there's less cruise infrastructure, places in Africa. But I'm trying to think past that. I think we go pretty much everywhere that there's an ocean.
And the other thing that's happening, which I think is a good idea, it may not be happening as much with NCL, but maybe you'll correct me, is the number of overnight stays you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's big on all the cruise on all of our cruise lines. Yes, overnight stays is a big deal. People like to experience the culture directly. Staying late allows them to go off the ship at night. I'll be honest, though, you know, most guests like to come back to the comfort of home. You know, we have so many wonderful options for dinner. Most of them come back anyway, but it is nice for a small segment of the guests to stay later.
I mean, but for me, every cruise itinerary that, you know, well, the ship arrives at 7 in the morning and leaves at 4 in the afternoon, after a while, it's like, really?
Well, you know, the nice thing is you can get a tremendous number of experiences within a 1 week or 10 day vacation. So to be able to go to, you know, within a week, 5 or 6 different ports, it it makes for a very varied and interesting experience.
All right, but call me old school. I like at least 2 or 3 days at sea.
You know, we have a lot of guests, and we try to get at least 1 day at sea.
Yeah.
More to let people catch up on their sleep from getting up at 7 o'clock every morning. And people seem to enjoy that, and then get to enjoy the onboard facilities like the racetrack, shopping, casino, all those other lovely things.
All right. Not to reveal any proprietary information, but in this world of experiential one-upsmanship with rock climbing walls and ice skating rinks and, you know, roller coasters and, you know, water slides, what's next?
That's a really great question, and we'll tell you next year.
Don't
when
do that.
We have a new class of ships coming. So this is the
the Schlepper class. Is it the Schlepper class?
No. The Leonardo class. So this is the last in our breakaway class. We built six ships that are.
I want to come up with a Schlepper class.
No.
I'm not
putting you in marking, Peter.
Wait, you haven't heard my whole spiel, right? You come up with a Schlepper class of ship, and the name of the first ship is Murray. Murray, and that's it, right?
I think that was cruising the way it was 20 years ago, and now we have better class names for that. Yeah. And so we have after this ship, which is the last of our most successful class of ships, we have the Leonardo class ships, where the first ship's coming in June of 2022. So those ships, the first of those ships, goes on in sale in April, in 6 months. So we'll be starting to talk about that ship after we're done with the festivities on Encore.
What, Leonardo, is it going to be bigger than this class ship?
No, we're actually going a little bit smaller. So
really?
Yes. So we took a strategy that we wanted to have cruise ship sizes in four different classes. So we have five ships that have about 2,000 passengers. We have four ships that have about 2,400 passengers. We have these six ships that have between 3,500 and 4,000 passengers. And with the Leonardo ship, we're going to a cruise ship that has about 3,200, 3,300 passengers.
Is that a sweet spot for you?
I think the variability having four different sizes allows us to go to places all around the world and fit the perfect size ship with the perfect itinerary.
Well, it gives you more options.
Exactly. And gives our guests more options.
I mean, there was a point where this ship could not have gone through the Panama Canal.
Yes.
Now it can because it's the new canal.
Up until a few years ago, yes, yeah. And just makes it too.
Just makes it, yes. By inches.
I'm not sure about
no,
inches.
No, it is by inches. It really is.
Yes.
When your passengers are coming to you and saying, okay, we've done this, when are you going to go X? What's the one thing that you hear more often than anybody else that they want to go somewhere? Now, obviously, you guys got, not you guys, the entire cruise industry got a little blindsided by the Trump administration on Cuba. Let's call it what it is.
That was a shame.
And that was a lot of bookings that just disappeared because they couldn't go anymore.
Exactly.
Right? But where is the next, if you will excuse the expression, Cuba, where it is accessible to you?
I don't think there's going to be a next Cuba. Cuba was a unique opportunity where Americans weren't allowed to travel there for something like 50 years. Then there was a tremendous amount of pent-up demand. I'm not aware of any other, major destination, certainly nothing so close to the United States, that was off limits for the next 50 years. Listen, we would love to see places like Venezuela, get back to where it was many years ago, to make that a more appealing destination that's also close to home. And there's also places perhaps a little further north, in the Arctic and Antarctic, that people seem on a niche basis to want to go.
Will you do the Northwest Passage?
It's challenging. It's really challenging. Certainly we couldn't do it on a Norwegian ship. They're simply too big. But we look at it on our Oceania and Regent brands from time to time as well. And there's a logistical challenge. But more than that, there's a safety issue. You're literally in the middle of nowhere, hundreds and hundreds of miles away from
with
any port.
With no plan B. Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio with no particular place to go. Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now.
The man who walks up those miles to fall.
Joining me now, the captain of the Encore, Nicholas Person. How are you, sir?
I'm very good, thanks.
Captain, I have to ask a question that I've been, for me it's obvious, for most of my audience maybe not. You have to redefine the word captain these days, because it's not just about navigation and rules of the road. You have to be an engineer. You have to be a technician. You have to understand every system. The ship is like probably 60 different systems. I mean, that's a big learning curve.
It sure is. Luckily, I have a very good team to assist me.
Right, but it's more than just, you know, where are we going today? It's what's happening on deck nine, what's going on in the engine room, what's happening in the laundry. Everything is interconnected. You can't look at it one-dimensionally.
That is for sure true. Luckily, we have very good automation systems to help us out also with all these big ships coming out. We need good automation systems to help us.
What I always like about modern cruise ships, especially on the bridge, is you've got your display panels. And your display panels, you have probably, and I may be low on this, at least 1,000 cameras somewhere, right?
Yes.
In that way, that are live, digital, 24/7. So you have eyes on everything that you need in critical spaces, the engine room, the generators, the waste management, everything, so that if there's a problem, you can spot it immediately and deal with it instantaneously.
That's correct, and that's exactly how we use the system. If we have a fire alarm, we can automatically track in on the closest camera that zooms in.
What I really love about it is, on a ship this big, it's a small city, we know it is, on a ship this big, if I mistakenly leave my iPhone at the pool, and I'm, oh my God, I get back to my cabin, I don't know where it is, I can go to any one of your guys and say, I left it at the pool, what time did you leave it? They can go back and look at the video and tell you exactly where the phone went.
We can.
Yeah.
So that's a very good thing.
The other thing that you have on this ship, which we've done stories on it before, and most ships have it these days, speaking of cameras, you've got forward-looking and aft-looking infrared cameras.
That's correct.
That give you a real-time picture of what's happening over the side of the ship.
Yes.
So God forbid there's a problem. God forbid, and we had such, I'll tell you the story. It's an amazing story. There was a couple that was in their cabin, and the next morning the woman was missing, and the husband was immediately suspected. Right. And the actual video record that they had was of the couple. And by the way, I should tell everybody, you do not have cameras inside cabins. You have cameras in public areas, right?
Yes.
And the story is that the video captured the couple walking back to their cabin and closing the door. And about 20 minutes later, the cameras actually got the man coming out of the cabin going to the casino.
Yeah.
And then they didn't see the woman. Mm. Right. It was the infrared cameras that caught her, and actually she jumped over.
Yeah.
Right? So he was off the hook, so to speak.
Yeah.
But the point is, you have what it allows you to do in an emergency situation is get information much more realistically and in real time.
Yes. Safety, security point of view, it's very, very useful.
And the same thing applies, you know, the worst thing that can happen on a ship is fire.
Yes.
You and I both know that because I live on a boat. And I have a button on my, if a fire breaks out in my engine room, right? And I have up on my control panel on the bridge, and I get a light that says you have a fire in the engine room. There's another button I'm supposed to push. And you and I both know that before I get to push that button, there's another button that goes, are you sure? Because once I push that button, I basically flood the engine room with firefighting chemicals, or in your case, it would be mist.
Correct.
And it's done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So, I mean, and you can do that quickly.
Very quickly.
That's changed from the old days.
That has changed a lot.
Yeah.
So you have automated systems, and on top of that, you can actually do it manual.
Right. Plus, you know, if Mrs. Schmidlap is smoking in her cabin and smoking is not allowed, you can get to Mrs. Schmidlap to tell her that smoking is not allowed.
We will get that alarm. So we can see that.
Right.
Yeah.
And people try to cheat all the time on that, don't they? They can't help themselves, right?
It happens.
It happens, yeah. I know. And the crew, too.
That happens.
I know. What's the biggest challenge that you have other than just the size of the ship? Because when you train on a ship like this, maneuverability is key.
Yes.
You know, and you've got the joystick.
Yes.
You've got all sorts of thrusters.
Yes.
Right? And you are actually, tell me if I'm wrong, but you are, other than port requirements, you don't really need tugboats.
No, correct. That's correct. So we don't need tugboats.
And yet some reports require you to have them.
Yes. That is also correct.
But you can spin this on a dime.
Yes, you can. You have very good maneuverability. With these new ABB azipods, you have extremely good maneuverability.
Yeah, what we're talking about when we talk about the azipods, we're not talking about typical propellers and rudders. There is no rudder. right? The Azipod is the propeller and the rudder because it spins 360 degrees.
That is correct. So you can go positive RPM, negative RPM, and then you can turn them 360 degrees.
How long is this ship?
So you have 330 meters of ship.
So we're basically, my goodness, that's 1,000 feet.
Yes, more than 1,000 feet.
Wow. And the beam of this ship is wild. It's wild.
Yeah, it is 41 meters.
So we're talking seriously wide, seriously long.
Yeah.
And yet you can stop this thing on a dime because of the azipods.
That is correct.
And for those people who don't know what I'm talking about, we're not talking about a traditional ship with a rudder and propellers. We're talking about a ship that's got a self-contained 360-degree rudder and propeller, if you will, which is an azipod. And you've got how many of them?
Two.
Two.
Two in the back.
So basically, depending on which angle you turn them, you can either spin this on a dime, you can stop it on a dime, and my most favorite thing that you can do is you can hold your position on a dime.
That is absolutely correct.
Right? It's called what? Dynamic position?
Dynamic positioning system.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because when you deal with momentum, you know, it's most people, this always amazes me when somebody buys a boat, you know, recreational boating, very few licensing requirements in the United States. It always astounds me that you know, you can get a lethal weapon and just get in it. And so many of the people, even my friends who buy a boat, you know, they're looking for the brake and the turn signal, and I'm saying it doesn't work that way. You know, you need to understand speed and momentum, because if you don't do that, you're going to do damage to your ship, to other people, or the dock, or all three,
yes.
Right? So before you ever enter harbor, right, even though you have a harbor pilot on board, you're watching momentum more than anything else.
Absolutely. Momentum and weather and current. You really have
and
to
drift.
Pay attention. And drift, yes.
Yeah. Because no matter how big this ship is, it will drift.
It will drift. It's a big sail area.
What's your biggest challenge based on the size of the ship then?
With these good systems, I don't see much of a challenge. Of course, you need the infrastructure in the ports to receive these big ships. As long as you have that, there is no challenge. And as long as you have enough power. And for me, Azipods is the way to go.
Now, when they first came out with the Azipods, it wasn't the way to go. There was nothing but trouble, right?
Yeah, it's been a learning experience.
No kidding.
Yeah.
But they figured it out now.
Absolutely.
And what does it do in terms of your performance, in terms of your fuel consumption, in terms of your hull speed?
It's only positive aspects. So you have a lot of systems now to minimize fuel consumptions. And Azipods are very efficient, more efficient than traditional, conventional propellers and rudders.
Because
it's just a better flow of water through the propellers and through the azipods. So you can actually tow the propellers or the azipods slightly out to get a better flow.
And of course, the design of the ship at the front, you still have the bulbous bow.
That is correct. Yeah, we do.
I mean, that intuitively doesn't seem like it would work, and right? I mean, what's this thing protruding from the bow?
Yeah, it just minimizes the friction for the hull.
Or it distributes it.
Correct.
Wow. Now, it's one thing to have a ship of this size. It's another thing for efficiency and flow, to move people throughout the ship and to get them off the ship.
Yes.
Right? My biggest fear as the ships got bigger and bigger is by the time you got off the ship, it was time to get back on it again. Right?
Yeah.
How have you fixed that?
I mean, you really want to have, again, back to the infrastructure in the ports. We have a lot of shell doors, a lot of ways to put linkways and gangways on board a ship. But it's back to the infrastructure in the actual port.
Because I remember in the old days, you had two gangways, one going up for passengers, one going down for crew.
Yeah.
Right? That's different too.
So that's different. We have much more gangways and linkways connected. As many as we can hook up, we will hook up to get that flow. We don't want lines. We really want to minimize the lines, and we want to have a good flow coming on board and going off the ship.
Now, there are some ports where you can't tie up. You have to tender in.
Yes.
Right? And the same flow challenges are there as well.
Absolutely. And then you also have the weather aspect, of course, and the distance you need to tender. So that can be challenging sometimes. But we have also four big tender platforms on this ship. So you can get a good flow as long as you have the tender boats.
Now, you mentioned the tender boats.
Yeah.
The design of those boats has changed.
Yes.
They're actually looking better now.
Yeah.
They're actually handling the sea better.
Yes.
And they actually hold more people.
They do.
What does a tender hold right now?
It depends. I mean, normally on this ship, it's planned to use shoreside tenders. We will not use shipside tenders. So looking at GSC, our private island, Great Stirrup Cay, we have two 450 people tenders.
That's big.
That is very big tenders. And then we have 250 tenders.
But as opposed to what you have on this ship that you use as tenders, what's the maximum capacity?
So right now we only have on this ship, we only have lifeboats. So we are not using tender boats on this ship.
Wow, that's new.
That is fairly new.
Wow, interesting. So you're really depending on the infrastructure on the shore.
Exactly.
And they better get their act together.
That's correct.
I just thought I'd mention that. Yeah. Is there a port you can't get into?
Quite a few, actually. You are on a ship like this, you are limited. Definitely limited on where you can go.
I mean, you can get through the Panama Canal.
This is designed to go through the Post-Panamas. Yes.
The new one.
The new one.
Yeah, of course.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care. I am a
passenger. Lots of stories to talk about, but in particular, this particular ship, and joining me now, the UK managing editor of Cruise Critic, Adam Coulter. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me.
I mean, this is not your first cruise.
No, I've been on a few.
How does this, I mean, this is a brand new ship. I mean, literally brand new, right out of the shipyard. Yeah. How does this ship differ from the product that you've seen on other NCL ships or on other ships in general?
Sure. Well, I mean, I love this hardware, first of all. I love being on these brand new ships. I love the smell of it and, you know, when it's fresh out of the
dock. Has a new ship smell, doesn't it?
It does have a new ship smell, yeah. In terms of how it compares, I've been very fortunate. I've been on all the inaugurals for Norwegian over the past few years, all the Breakaway and the Breakaway Plus ships. And this one, obviously, there's a few tweaks. The go-kart was a huge success, the go-kart track, and they've extended it.
They've literally extended it over the side of the
ship. Over the side, that's right. They've made it a little bit bigger.
Have you done it yet?
I haven't done it yet, but I'm looking forward to doing it.
Okay.
Yeah. I have done it on previous ships.
I've done it as well.
Yeah.
It's a pretty cool feeling.
It is. It gets pretty tough out there because you're not meant to be bumping into people, but people do. I think they think it's bumper cars, whereas in fact it's meant to be a go-kart track. And the funny thing is, you may have noticed this, they have these little speakers in the sort of cockpit area that make you think you're going really fast. But then when you step out and you watch other people doing it, it's just like an electric motor and it's completely silent.
Exactly.
It's great. And then there's the laser tag, which again, I haven't done yet, but I'm very much looking forward to doing that. And also, there's a few new dining concepts, which are interesting as well.
Well, before we get to the food, let's just talk about the attractions. Because in this game of one-upsmanship, every cruise line is trying to outdo everyone else. One has a roller coaster. One has a wave riding machine. One's got the go-kart racetrack. I mean, where does it end?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I remember a few Aprils ago, April the 1st, someone came out with the idea of perhaps having a ski run. And people
bought it.
People bought it because, to be honest, nowadays, it's almost anything, you know, you can have on board. You have that North Star on the Quantum class ships from Royal. You have the bumper cars on Royal as well. As you said, the flow riders, you know, simulated surfing. So why not, you know, a ski run? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but you know.
Well, it was an April Fool's joke.
It was an April Fool's joke. But, you know, these things happen.
And look, they even have an attraction on the ship called Walk the Plank.
Right, exactly, which I have done and is terrifying.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. You go right out over the side. You're strapped in, right? You've got a big harness on and stuff. But
a really big harness, I hope?
It's a very big harness, and it takes you out about 6 feet over the ship. But you're on the top deck, and that's about 18 decks, and you're looking straight down into the water. It's terrifying.
Could you count me out on that one?
I'm not
going to happen.
Do it again.
It will not happen. But beyond that, beyond the, you know, the April Fool's joke, I'm assuming that if the engineering's feasible, they're going to try to do it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I wish I had a crystal ball and I could say, well, what's around the corner? But what is the amazing thing is that all these lines are coming up with, as you say, bigger, better, more of a wow factor. And I think Norwegian, Royal, Carnival, they lead the way in that, really.
And what works next? I mean, because you're limited. As big as this ship is, and as big as the other new ships are, you're still limited in available space.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, these ships are getting bigger and bigger, right? And then if you're doing stuff like, for example, the water slides go over the edge of the ship, the racetrack goes over the edge of the ship, so maybe you go out further and further and further, you know.
Which then limits you into which ports you can go without banging into something. I mean, unless they fold up, you know. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, the level of engineering here on these ships blows my mind. And when people go to amusement parks, you know, attractions in the States or wherever, and then they come on board these ships, people who haven't been before, I defy them not to say that this is as good or better.
Exactly. Now, moving right along to some other stuff in the news. Earlier this year, the Trump administration essentially blindsided everybody and said, okay, no more cruises to Cuba. That was about 800,000 bookings that essentially evaporated.
Yeah, that was a big blow. And I don't think, well, there were rumblings, but the lines weren't ready for that because they piled in as soon as Cuba became open. And that was a big blow at the start of the year.
I know. And it hurt their earnings, of course. But
it did, yeah.
But the bottom line is for passengers, many of whom had been really looking forward to this.
I mean, to be fair, the lines, they didn't see it coming and they scrambled and they put in alternative destinations. The problem is it's not like saying, okay, you can't go to XYZ Caribbean island. This is Cuba. It's unique. And as you say, that's the issue. There isn't really an alternative, but they've done their best under the circumstances, I think.
Yeah, and hopefully it'll come back.
Well, hopefully. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there are rumors again. The thing is, you never know, without getting too political, what's going to happen next with the U.S. administration. You know, he could decide, okay, well, let's open it again for business. Part of the challenge is, though, open it up again, but what happens if it then closes again? So I think it's tricky.
Well, the odds of him opening it up again right now are pretty slim, since he just banned all U.S. airline flights to Cuba except for Havana. So all the other airports they were going to are now closed and off limits.
Yeah, I mean, this is it. It's tricky. If I were the lines, I wouldn't necessarily bet on that happening. But it was a tough blow for them. But as I say, they've done well under the circumstances to scramble the ships to other places.
Is there another port that you hear that the cruise lines are looking at, not to replace Cuba, but people who always wanted to go that now they're going to finally go?
Well, in that area, I think some of the places that I'd always predict are interesting are the Central American ports. Now, I'm not talking necessarily about Roatan, which is part of Honduras, but it's kind of, you know, not really. I'm talking about the ones with a little bit more sort of character and color to them, and you see some of those on the Caribbean coast, but also on the Pacific coast as well. Places like Limon, and then other parts, for example, Belize, I think is somewhere that's ripe for opening up to cruises.
Well, I'm going to be on an NCL ship in a couple of weeks, and we're going to Guatemala.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the places which I think is a fascinating option, and I think Central America is one to watch for sure.
And anywhere else in the world, because China, of course, was the flavor of the day, and it didn't work out that well.
China was the great hope. What's interesting is, and I spoke to Michael Bailey from Royal Caribbean about this, and he was saying that the challenge was the infrastructure. So you and not just port infrastructure, but also the whole kind of the booking process and the agency that wasn't in place. But everyone was rushing to get in there. Now, to be fair to Royal, they've still got a number of ships in there, and indeed they're putting their new one in there as well. So to your question, I would say, for example, the Kimberley in Australia.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't been. I'd love to go. It's on the list.
Count me in on that again.
The charge for looking at this pamphlet is $3. The charge for looking at this pamphlet and putting it back quickly is $4.
He's the cruise director now on the Encore. Silas Cook, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Pleasure to be back.
In a world of continual evolution, and a game of one-upsmanship, it keeps getting crazier and crazier, because every time you come on a ship now, the words virtual reality, it's laser tag. I mean, somehow there's a boat that's floating, but inside is all this other stuff.
Correct. Inside and outside, and that's the best part. I mean, I think with Norwegian Encore, the word Encore in itself means that we've delivered an incredible product that was very popular, so we bring it back again, only bigger and better. And mentioning virtual reality, high tech, for somebody like me, I'm not a natural tech guy. However, everything
Welcome
that we
to
do
my club.
Offer, correct, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But everything that we do have, from the virtual reality center of Galaxy to the laser tag, and of course our Speedway, which is now even larger and extends over the side of the ship even further, is very, very user friendly and also appeasing to all ages and demographics.
And no limits.
And no, well, limits. Like, there's a speed limit. You can get a ticket if you go a little too fast. Yeah,
come on.
That happens. I know. I see it in your eye. I see it in your eye. You're going to have to contain yourself on the speedway, okay?
No, what do you mean you get a ticket? Stop.
I'll issue them just for fun. Why not?
Okay. But the point is, I mean, you have limited speeds because it's centrifugal force.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
For somebody that's not a tech guy, that sounds good to me.
Yes. You'll live with that, right? But then there are the other entertainments, because it used to be that you'd bring up an entertainment venue on a ship, which you tried to fit into the ship. Mm-hmm. Now you're doing something where you're building the venue for the entertainment.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if you take a look and you go on the outer decks here on the Encore, when you get a look at the laser tag, for example, you don't feel like you're on a ship whatsoever for the quality of the scenic and the product that's there. It's fantastic. It's essentially the Lost City of Atlantis that you enter in with a giant sea serpent that's looming over your head as there's augmented reality and the competition of the other team, too. So it's really otherworldly. It takes you away from the ship. And what I hear a lot on these sized vessels is the fact that people don't feel like they're on a ship. They forget that when they're on the vessel because of the layout and what's happening around them. They get lost in the moment and the activities or the venue and the product that's being delivered.
And when you have this number of passengers on the ship, you have to give them space.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's sort of like this double-edged sword where the bigger the ship, the more space, and the bigger the ship, the more you could get lost.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So you have to look from the dynamics of it. Mm-hmm. How do you fill every square inch of space with an opportunity for people to feel that it's not that big?
Correct. And we've really done a great job with our mega ships, per se, or the Breakaway Plus class ships to offer venues in spaces in multiple lounges in multiple decks and locations too, from forward to aft. Obviously, our internals of deck 6, 7, and 8, and then you get up on the outer decks as well to really spread people out quite a bit. So, we have a theater that, for example, sits close to 900. Now, for a ship this size, it does seem small. However, in our benefit, that is purpose-built because we have more than twice as many other entertainment lounges, events, and activities than you would on what many people may be familiar with as a normal-built ship with a very large theater and maybe two supporting lounges.
So that's a lesson you learn from other ships, which is not to make the theater too big, because then people feel it's not special enough.
Well, I'm sure some people may see it that way. I think it's options. You opt for quality, variety, options, and it also spreads guests out. So when they leave one venue, there's multiple things from 5 to 6 other entertainment options or activities taking place at any given time. And that keeps the traffic flow moving and it keeps them busy.
Keeps them busy.
That's the idea. If they want, not required.
Broadway. You've got Kinky Boots.
We have Kinky Boots.
Now,
do you have your Kinky Boots?
Don't read my mind. No, but that takes me to my next question, which is, you are now taking to another level,
yep.
Right? You're not breaking the fourth wall, but the point is, you're being a little bit more, what?
Kinky. No, it's
but from a traditional cruise passenger yeah. perspective, I have these visions of the women with the blue hair going, Mildred, what is that?
Right. Yes. Yeah. No, I mean Kinky Boots is obviously, it's trending, it's award-winning,
right.
And that's become a trademark that Norwegian has. And of course, kudos to the entertainment team and those that have actually been able to bring these shows on our large vessels. Kinky is the next chapter in that as well, alongside that with Choir of Man, which is an incredibly popular show too. So two major shows that we do that we can put on with great variety, so it really appeases to all demographics.
Be a rapid change in cabin pressure, oxygen masks will automatically drop from the compartment above your seat, free of charge. And to start the flow of oxygen, pay your flight attendant $75.63. My mother, God rest her soul.
Joining me now, someone who I last saw on the Norwegian Bliss, who's the Vice President of Guest Experience. Is there a President of Guest Experience?
Not yet.
Okay, well, I'll give you that title.
Thank you.
Simon Murray, thank you for joining us.
Cheers, thank you.
How could there be a Vice President, not a President of Guest? Okay, you know what? I'll be the President of Guest Experience. There
Good
you go.
Idea.
Good. But being the Vice President of mm-hmm. Guest Experience means that you're in charge of the bells and whistles.
Yes.
You're in charge of the gee whiz items on the ship.
That's right.
Right? Whether it's the racetrack, mm-hmm. whether it's the old days of the rock climbing wall, the whatever wave machines you've got, ice skating machines, water slides, the whole bit, right?
That's correct, yes.
Which means you're the first line of defense in, you want to do what?
Pretty much. And that comes up all the time.
Right. And when I talk to Frank Del Rio, who's, mm-hmm. you know, who runs all of the of NCL and Regent and Oceania,
uh-huh.
he said to me, you know how I got the idea for the racetrack? It came from my kids, my mm-hmm. grandkids.
That's right.
Who said, you know, we just, could you do that?
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, okay. And then it was up to you guys to figure out how to
make it work. Yeah, look, that's how it works. The ideas come from a very broad sense of people and ideas and themes, and I have to work it out. So, you know, if Frank or Harry says, look, hey, let's do this, then it's a matter of taking that and putting it into this wonderful ship that we have, which is always very challenging.
Well, you've got space, design, yep. safety, mm-hmm. seaworthiness, I mean, everything, right?
All those things, and really safety.
Not to mention liability.
That's true, and safety is always number one. So when we looked at the go-kart track initially, we had a lot of things asked, what happens if so-and-so or something occurs? So we build to make sure that it's safe and secure first, and then the experiences on top and laid into that too.
So I got to ask this question.
Yep.
I mean, when we were on the Bliss, you had the racetrack, mm-hmm. right? And it was pretty fun. I mean, I had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
This one is wilder because it actually hangs over the side of the ship.
13 feet over each side of the ship. So it's really, you're literally over the ocean up high. It's amazing. The track's a lot wider as well. The track's a lot longer. We're around 50 meters, so 170 feet longer than what we had on the Bliss. And it's just been, it's iterations of change to just keep making it really cool and improving on the process and what we do for the guest.
And how fast do these things actually go?
If we were to let them go as they are, about 50 miles an hour, which we don't do that, right? Incredibly fast.
Well, so late at night when no one's watching. Simon, have you done it?
How about me and you later on?
Okay, done.
President and Vice President, right? We'll do that.
Yeah. You're reporting to me now.
Yes, okay. Sir. You got it. You got it.
But actually, they're not going 50 miles.
No, about 32 miles an hour is what we max them out to, which feels extremely fast because you're obviously open air. You're so low to the ground too. They're extremely fast, but you know, it's more about the experience to make sure that you're not braking too much, so a good driver can drive the car flat out and have a really wonderful time.
Right. But this isn't like bumper cars where you're smashing into the wall.
Definitely not. And it's really a race experience. So you're not designed to be there with your buddies and mates and trying to give them a little love tap or put them in the wall. No. There's a whole safety briefing that goes with it. It's a driving experience.
Now, given that we live in a world of experiential one-upsmanship.
Yep.
Everybody's coming up with new stuff. Well, if we've done that, let's do this.
Uh-huh. Right?
What was the one thing that came across your desk that, let's try this, and you said, no, this truly is crazy. We're not going to do it.
Well, initially it was go-kart, because when you look at the weight of it, where it is on the vessel, it sounded odd at the time, as in like really out of the ordinary. Initially, the engineers said, you're bloody crazy. We cannot do this, but worked it out, worked together, and here it is. I have a lot of things that are in the works now that unfortunately I can't share, even with you, Mr.
No, but I'm talking, even though you report to me.
Exactly, okay, yeah. What?
Fine. But by the way, that's the story of my life. Nobody tells me anything.
Okay.
But bottom line is, let's go back in history.
Yep.
When something came across your desk, mm-hmm. and you're like, this is not going to work, and it didn't work. What did you try to put on a ship that just, it's sort of like, you talk to a chef on an airline and they'll tell you, mm-hmm. about, you can't make a souffle because of humidity and pressure, it just drops.
Right.
You can't do it. So there are certain things you just can't do, right?
Correct.
Like?
Anything. So the two big issues we have is what we call a non-static load. So, for example, water is not static. It shifts. So it causes a lot of issues from weight dispersion and things on ships. Anything that's a non-static load is always very difficult to accommodate. So for those things, we kind of eliminate them quite quickly.
Such as?
A lazy river.
Right.
You know, that would have been a really cool thing to do on a ship, right? Think about it. You're up by the pool deck with a lazy river. But the amount of water that would take and that water shifting is structurally not possible.
So that's the crazy river, not the lazy river.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, that's true.
Okay, fine. So that's not going to happen.
Correct.
Okay, but you do have water slides.
We do have water slides.
Because the speed is different.
The speed is different, but also the water slides that we use, the amount of water, it's virtually a mist. So the engineering that's gone into those to make them as such allows us to do things like that.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.